Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, City Commissioners. I'm David Wine. I'm the Deputy Chief Financial Officer and the Budget Director for Portland Public Schools. First of all, thank you for including Portland Public Schools in the advisory committee that considered these changes. We appreciate that as a partner jurisdiction. We do support these proposals. Moving properties out of urban renewal and back onto the tax rolls is the ultimate objective of urban renewal, and we're pleased to see that happening. I've joked for some time that urban renewal is the Hotel California of public finance. You check in, but you never leave. I think I may not be able to use that anymore if we start accelerating pulling things out of urban renewal. So I'm disappointed at losing that punchline, but happy to see us moving property back onto the tax rolls. This will benefit the state school fund and schools across the state, including Portland Public Schools. And the only other thing I did want to say is that in regard to the education urban renewal, the original plans for that, which never really took off, did include the Lincoln High School site, which we care about. And we are in the early stages of developing some possibility of including that in a capital bond. And whilst we're disappointed to see it fall out of that possible urban renewal area, we're excited about the possibility of working with the city as we get and develop plans over time for that site.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks for working on this with us.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of the City Council. My name is Kevin Reynolds. I'm Vice President for Finance and Administration at Portland State University. President Vivelle is out of town today, but he wanted to convey his personal thanks to the Mayor, Executive Director Quinton, members of the Council, and others who have worked so diligently over the past period of time on this development agreement between PDC and PSU. We're very grateful. We do fully support the changes to the Education North Macadam URAs as have been proposed this afternoon. We really appreciate the collaborative effort to develop a synergistic plan which not only supports the growth of our university over the next 10 years and benefits for students, but continues the development of this great city of ours. We believe this new agreement continues to recognize our critical role in education and research and our contribution to economic development and cultural impact in Portland. It further strengthens what is always already a great relationship between the city and the university, and it helps us plan our future as we expand our urban mission. As you know, Portland State University worked very closely with the city and with the PDC to develop the education URA. We advocated strongly for it because we believed it would have bolstered our growth, created new downtown low-income and student housing, and had other benefits. That said, from our standpoint, the changes proposed today to expand the North Macadam URA is a cost-effective alternative and would further guide further development of a downtown area, including the university district. In closing, we fully support the URA changes as approved. The changes show continued commitment from the city to support our university and our students and our community partners. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I want to thank you and President Vivelle. This is an extraordinary act of civic partnership on PSU's part, and it's much appreciated here.
Thank you very much.
Ryan, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and members of the commission. Brian Newman with Oregon Health and Science University. I was also a member of the Urban Revisory Amendment Committee that Jillian Detweiler chaired, and I want to thank Jillian and the PDC staff. They kept us laser-focused on the three goals that you set out at the beginning of the hearing today. Before I jump into my testimony, I just want to clarify one thing that Patrick mentioned. There's no OHSU land or buildings that are being transferred from the education URA to North Macadam. I think he made an honest mistake in that there were two parcels that OHSU owned in the original education URA, but those buildings, like most of the land that's in the education URA, are being removed from that district. They're not being transferred, so I just want to make sure that was clear. As you know from my testimony 3 weeks ago, we're actively expanding our academic and clinical campus in South Waterfront, including building out the local road network to serve our buildings. Through the Knight Cancer Challenge and our own revenue, we will have developed just over 40% of our campus by the time this next wave of development is completed in 2018, well on our way of building out that full campus as we expected over 25 years. Healthcare is an industry that's changing rapidly, and this campus expansion allows us to continuing to carry out our mission of providing the state of Oregon and all of Oregonians access to healthcare the research and the clinical trials that we provide, as well as training for healthcare jobs. Although we're not an economic development agency, when we do our work well, we produce quality jobs, temporary jobs from the construction activities for the projects that we're working on now, but also permanent well-paying jobs in healthcare, teaching, research, and support roles. We also ensure our job creation actions benefit the community as a whole. As an example, our construction jobs are 100% union wage, prevailing wage jobs, and we include significant mentorship opportunities and participation for minority, women-owned, and emerging small businesses. We're also making significant investments in the Jefferson High School cluster to encourage and enable students from underrepresented communities to pursue healthcare as a career. OHSU strongly supports the ordinance before you today, as we believe it is the only mechanism the city has to complete the regional portion of the transportation network serving South Waterfront. Today, all traffic in South Waterfront, be it bike, car, auto, bike, pedestrian, auto, truck, is funneled on Southwest Moody Street, which is already congested. The extension of Bond Avenue is critical. Our patients, students, and employees appreciate the city taking the action necessary to continue improving access into the district. And so with that, we support the ordinance and really thank the city for its partnership, and we're happy to participate in the process.
Thank you. Chairman, if I could make one comment. I was just doing the math. I'm the only member of the council before you today that actually voted for the education URA. So we have a little history with at least two of the three presenters. And I want to thank particularly PSU for the collaborative way they have engaged the Plan B that has been put before you. And from my point of view, there were two necessary conditions that had to be met. One was that we had to find an alternative way to support the growth and expansion of the university district, which is both good for PSU and good for the city. And we had to find a way to compensate for the loss of the set-aside money for affordable housing in an area that was ripe for development. There was a lot of dirt that could be developed. And I appreciate in that regard that, as Patrick noted, the proposal to expand North McAdam actually accelerates the availability of dollars for affordable housing. So that's not just a sort of a neutral consequence. That actually puts us ahead in the short term in terms of available dollars. But appreciate the way that you approached those negotiations.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish.
And I wanted to add to that, thank you for raising the issue of who voted for the education you are in, who did not. Because I did not.
I'm awfully lonely up here, but.
And it was very important to me that a promise is a promise. And so I worked with President Vivelle over the past year to make sure that he is okay and that this university is okay with the revised proposal. I don't know whether I'm going to support it or not. It's still important to me that when the council as a whole makes a promise, that we keep our promises. And so thank you for being a partner in figuring out what that looks like.
All right. Thank you and President Robertson as well for being amazing partners and carrying out your part of the plan rather aggressively, and we appreciate that. Thank you all. Thanks very much. Now we have some more folks that were on the committee that I want to call, please. Debbie Kitchen, Sean Hubert, and Marion Haynes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am Sean Hubert. I'm the Chief Housing Officer for Central City Concern, and I had the opportunity to serve on both the URA Advisory Committee and the West Quadrant Plan, and my testimony today bridges both of those. The Advisory Committee was tasked, as you know, with balancing key URA district goals with a desire to return revenue to the taxing jurisdictions.
Can you move the mic a little closer? It moves.
So overall, I think that this has been achieved in the recommendations before you, which deliver a significant net gain to the taxing jurisdictions while preserving key investment opportunities needed to realize URA goals. I particularly want to highlight a few areas relevant to our work at CCC: the River District downtown URA adjustments and the North McAdam and affordable housing goals. By many measures, the River District has been a success, but its boundary also includes areas within Old Town that continue to struggle with disinvestment and blight. The committee engaged in a very robust conversation on how much acreage to remove or retire in light of this need in Old Town. In the end, while not unanimous, the community voted to include Block 33 within the River District while still achieving a significant overall reduction in URA acreage. The CCC strongly supports this proposed amendment as Block 33 represents a significant potential catalytic site in the heart of the Old Town District. And in our view, inclusion of this site supports the city's ongoing efforts in the revitalization of the original downtown and the one area of the central city which has not participated in the broader real estate recovery. In terms of the North McAdam URA boundary, the committee affirmed the value that Portland State University brings to both the local district economy as well as that of the overall city. However, the district has been challenged in living up to its original affordability goals, and the comprehensive plan goals around economic diversity reflective of the broader city. And this led to a difficult discussion about whether to revise downward these goals given resource constraints. And we are pleased that after much discussion, the district's original housing goals have been reaffirmed in the recommendations before you. But the struggles present in the North McAdam affordable housing conversation are reflective of the issues faced by the city as a whole and illustrate that affordability and economic diversity in neighborhoods will not be achieved without a robust set of tools and resources coordinated across the city's bureaus. I want to applaud the city's ongoing look at zoning incentives and other tools to further affordability, and it's also its deployment of additional resources in the Interstate URA. But I also want to encourage the city to continue to look at ways of deeper and more effective coordination across city bureaus behind an aligned housing policy. And we'd like to continue to press the importance of achieving a dedicated revenue source that can be deployed citywide. Ultimately, if we're going to deliver on affordable, diverse, and inclusive neighborhoods, we will need a dedicated and predictable source of ongoing funding outside of the urban renewal areas. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Debbie Kitchen, and I'm representing the Central East Side Industrial Council. We had a member of our board, Peter Finley Fry, who participated on the advisory committee. We support the advisory committee's recommendations on the expansion and extension of the URA with the understanding that the projects support the following priorities. It's important to us to ensure efficient freight movement. Infrastructure improvements that enhance freight movement are a top priority, especially in the southern end of the district where higher density development is envisioned to occur, and this is in the light rail stations primarily. These improvements would also improve safety and access for all users of the transportation system and the district. Safer and easier access to Powell Boulevard and the Ross Island Bridge are a high priority and will facilitate more intensive business development around the light rail stations. We are concerned about the amendments that were in earlier versions of the advisory committee report about underdeveloped areas adjacent to the Clinton Station. However, at the time that we were looking at it, it hadn't been identified for affordable housing. We are fine with affordable housing at the Clinton Station. We would prefer that the, other than affordable housing, we would prefer that the investments focus on transportation and infrastructure improvements such as that. The ODOT blocks on Water Avenue have long been identified by our board as a priority for important development opportunity to add to the city's tax base. It's a high priority that we have development on the property that contributes to both the employment base of the city as well as the tax base, and this development should be prioritized for private sector employment expansion. More intensive development around the ODOT blocks and the light rail station may lead to the need for structured parking in the future, so we support evaluating the need and adding structured parking if it is deemed that it would unlock the development potential for those priority sites. This assessment should be coordinated with the CEIC's Transportation and Parking Advisory Committee. We support considerations that the Hosford-Abernathy Neighborhood Association has put forward about safety concerns on 11th and 12th between Hawthorne and Division. We don't favor speed bumps on those roads or narrowing the right-of-way, but something like pedestrian crossings or light traffic lights would be, we think, would be appropriate to kind of slow down traffic through that area. It is a connection with residential and the commercial on the Central East Side, district side, and we want to maintain the safety of that those crossings for pedestrians. Central East Side has been a unique opportunity and continues to be a unique opportunity for growth of employment and industrial sectors in our city's economy. And so we want to support the diverse industry clusters that are there. We feel that this expansion, and especially if the dollars are focused on some of the transportation improvements and ODOT blocks and the sites around the light rail stations, that that will help achieve that goal. We also feel that it's important to maintain the affordability of the business development opportunities there. It's going to be distinct and different from what's available in South Waterfront. Although there may be connections because of the bridge, we feel that this is an opportunity for startup businesses and smaller businesses to grow and prosper because we do have the industrial zoning, the stable conditions that promote long-term investment and close proximity to downtown and the central city. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
So Debbie, thank you for your testimony, for all your work on this. Is the Central Eastside Industrial Council confident that the language in the report addresses the concerns that you just raised?
The projects that were identified, how this money was being spent, I think it does support what we are recommending. So we're happy with that and support that. We do feel that there's more. There is that this increased density around the light rail stations is going to lead to some congestion issues and the ability for freight to move through the area and other transportation at these sites is really important. So we were happy to see those additions.
So there's strong enough policy language on the freight movement that you're comfortable?
Yes.
Thank you.
And it's combined with what the work that's happening in the Southeast Quadrant planning process where we are maintaining the district as a freight district. It does have underlying industrial zoning in most of the industrial sanctuary areas, and then with just small modifications in the corridors and around the light rail stations. Thank you.
Debbie, by the way, I'm going to nominate you later for the Scott Andrews Award for this year. I was reflecting that you're the perfect candidate for this year, and that goes to someone in the private sector who wears three or more leadership hats, testifies before us on a regular basis, has no possible way of maintaining her day job. And if there was any honor on our side, we'd actually give you an office so that you could do your work while you were here. So
I appreciate that. And I do have to give testimony to my husband, who does maintain and carry on the business while I am busy with many of my civic opportunities.
Thanks for all the hats you wear.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of the council. My name is Marianne Haynes, and I'm with the Portland Business Alliance. I should thank Debbie as well, who serves as our board chair this year. The Alliance served on the advisory committee for these changes and supports the package before you today. I would also like to thank PDC staff. This was a complex topic with a lot of moving parts given the six districts that we were working on, so they did a lot of work to keep us on track. The issue that was raised earlier by Central City Concern, I should just touch on briefly. We had gone into this process with a focus on Old Town, Chinatown, Skidmore area and had brought forth a recommendation for moving that block. It didn't ultimately come in the recommendations before you're here today, but we do hope to be able to have ongoing conversations about Old Town, Chinatown. It is an area of the city that still needs significant investment, and we think we can continue to have those conversations in the future. That being said, the Alliance has always supported the promise of urban renewal, and I think there are two sides to that in our view. One is the investments that we can make with the tax increment money to instigate new development, job creation, economic development, things of that nature that ultimately increase property values, which then brings you to the second part of fulfilling urban renewal, which is actually returning the money to the overlapping taxing jurisdictions. And I think with the package before you today, we've accomplished that goal and balanced those two things. So we're happy to support that.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you all. So now I want to call a distinguished housing panel, former Commissioner Gretchen Cafori, former city staff Margaret Bax, and okay. No, she's giving you deference. So we're all giving you deference. Okay. Well, that's fine. But why don't you come on up? Why don't you come on up with her, Gretchen, if you'd like? Okay. I hear you. All right. Thank you.
Sorry.
I will bow to your organization.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Hirsch, co-president of the League of Women Voters of Portland. This will be the first naysayer. The proposed Central East Side Amendment would expand the size and extend the life of that district by 5 years. The League urges the City Council to oppose this amendment. The proposed acreage expansion and half the funds from the five-year extension are targeted for development adjacent to the new Clinton Street light rail station. The city owns much of the land in the proposed Clinton Triangle expansion area. Surely we can find a different way to fund moving the city services located there, installing infrastructure, and guiding planned private development without taking money from classrooms and mental health services. Is it possible, for example, to issue bonds that could be repaid with proceeds from the sale of the improved land and the system development charges that would be collected when the land is developed? The district was created in 1986, was due to expire 9 years ago. In 2006, a review committee, the PDC board, the Planning Commission, all recommended extending the life of the district by 8 years and increasing the maximum indebtedness by $23 million. City Council instead chose to extend the district by 12 years, increase the maximum indebtedness by $35 million. If 5 more years are added to the Central East Side URA, it will have been in existence for 37 years before it stops issuing debt. This would make it the longest-lived district in the city's history. The local taxing jurisdictions, including the schools, the county, and the city's general fund, will not fully recover their foregone revenue until mid-century, this century, 2051-52. If the district ends in 2018, per the last amendment, this break-even point will occur in 2035-36. The other funds from the extension are targeted for opportunities that have recently emerged. Anyone passing through the Central East Side today will observe an actively developing district benefiting from many years of public investment. It by no means exhibits the underperformance and decay of an urban renewal area. Additional projects that would be nice to do will continue to come up because the Central East Side is an interesting and viable area. It is the League's position that the district should end in 2018 as it is currently planned. It is time to let the district continue its positive trajectory with private investment under the guidance of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and with support from city resources when needed. It has been said that urban renewal districts should not be used as the city's ATM. Extending the Central East Side Urban Renewal District is doing just that by taking money from the county and schools accounts to pay for improvements the city alone should provide. We urge the City Council to let the Central East Side Urban Renewal Area expire after 32 years and find another funding mechanism for the Clinton Triangle development.
Debbie? I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters also. Although the League appreciates the consideration staff have devoted to the North McAdam affordable housing concerns, we cannot support adoption of the plan amendment until there's more certainty about how the housing goals will be met. More details on the number and affordability of units on parcel three project, and secure commitments for sites from each of the major property owners, PSU, OHSU, and Zidel, are needed. The district's five-year extension and expansion is critical to their success. That should be used as leverage to acquire items that benefit the public, including land for affordable housing and parks. The public is understandably skeptical of the city's commitment to affordable housing in South Waterfront. 15 years have passed and only 209 units have been developed. Longtime observers have seen the city release property owners from their affordable housing obligations in the Central District, on OHSU's Block 33, and with PSU at the Doubletree site. Collectively, they represent close to 1,000 affordable units. The League recommends that you rebuild community trust by securing commitments for sites from the three major property owners before taking action and provide more details in the plan amendment. Oregon's urban renewal statute requires that substantial amendments include a description of each project, estimated total costs with sources of monies, and anticipated completion dates. This information is available for transportation, commercial redevelopment, and other anticipated projects, but not housing. We recommend the following revisions to the amendment. The concept of meeting the income profile of the city as a whole is a city policy and should be stated as such. Include a commitment to meet the income profile in newly developed units in the expansion area. The Harbor NATO site should be left out of the document unless the city is confident it is a viable location for housing. A recent report in Governing Magazine places Portland at the top of the list of 50 U.S. cities in the number of neighborhoods experiencing gentrification since 2000. The city anticipates significant residential growth in the central city, including South Waterfront. If Portland is going to live up to its ideal of a diverse and inclusive city, we need to devote considerably more attention and resources to housing affordability. Again, we urge you to withhold approval of the amendment until there are more specifics on Parcel 3 and firm commitments for affordable housing sites in the district. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor Hills, Commissioners, I'm Shelley Lorenzen, League of Women Voters of Portland. The proposal before you today would extend the life of the North McAdam District by 5 years. These additional 5 years will allow the PDC to collect property taxes to support improvements important to the Zidell's private development plans. We understand negotiations with Zidell have stalled or maybe are ongoing at best. In the League's view, extending the district in advance of a deal would be a critical mistake. That extension is your bargaining chip. No development agreement, no urban renewal dollars for infrastructure investment that will benefit the Zidells. We also urge the city not to consider the Zidells' planned development to be the fair exchange for urban renewal dollars. Per the development agreement, the Zidells do not have to develop anything unless the market is there. The city should stay firm that the Zidells must commit to affordable housing, parks, and greenway improvements in exchange for urban renewal dollars. Should the Zidells decide they are not willing to make those commitments, then the League urges the city to use its zoning power to require those fundamental features as part of this development. And in fact, we would suggest that that apply to OHSU properties as well as the Zidell properties. Today's proposal also would remove about 36 acres from the River District, as you heard earlier. And the League respectfully requests that you remove more acres from the district. While 36 acres may sound significant, the financial impact on the affected jurisdictions is actually very small. For example, in 2015-16, the city will have only $1.5 million more dollars to spend on citywide services, the county $1.4 million. These are insignificant sums compared to the tens of millions of dollars that go to PDC each year to pay for River District projects, $32 million in 2013 and 14 alone. We believe there's at least one obvious way that more acres could be removed from the district now and money for that Portland building. $30 million is in the budget for the post office property. We have been advised by the PDC that in any post office deal, the city will simply serve as a legal intermediary between the U.S. Postal Service and the private developers that will develop the property. In short, the city will buy and flip the property. Because of the unfortunate impact on the city, county, and schools, we urge you to explore whether this plan could be better financed in a different way without using urban renewal dollars. In other words, find another source of financing for the purchase of the post office property. Release the assessed value supporting the $30 million post office line item in the budget, and return the corresponding tax revenues to the taxing jurisdictions. Should this prove impossible, we ask that you at least remove that $30 million line item as soon as the post office deal is done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah, I have a few, and Debbie, I'm going to direct them to you.
Okay.
And I want to start by saying, and I apologize for my voice. I'm going to head home soon, but I believe that you are, if not the indispensable person, an indispensable person on this affordable housing piece. And I just want to thank you for service on the committee, for holding our feet to the fire, and for the quality of your advocacy.
Thank you for saying that.
And because you've given us comprehensive written testimony, I just want to clarify a few things, because it's very clear, but I just want to make sure that we have all the available information. The first is, with respect to the proposal to spend more than 30% on housing, do you have a position on that?
Well, I certainly think it's fine to spend more money on housing. Yeah.
with your help, maybe we'll export that to other districts. Number two, in your testimony, you raise a concern about getting further details about the number and affordability of units at Parcel 3. At page 29 of the document before us, and I realize this has gone through a lot of revisions at the end, so you may not have seen everything here, but it says that there will be at least 62 affordable units, 0 to 30, and the rest 138 at 30 to 60. And there is a whole paragraph describing that that's been drafted. Is that the kind of specificity you're looking for in terms of the hard numbers, at least the floor numbers of what we're going to build and at what income level?
Yes.
Okay.
Although let me just say, you know, I'm going to be followed by a number of people who have a lot of expertise in housing development, and I hope you ask them a similar question so they can give you more information.
Well, but I also think that it's trust but verify, so we want to make sure the language in here is clear about the floor that we're building, and you've called that out, so I appreciate that. You also mentioned in your testimony that we should consider deferring taking an action until we have a deal with Mr. Zeidel. And I appreciate the spirit of that, and there's been some discussion about, you know, whether that creates leverage and can we get certain goals. I'm just going to just make a comment about that, which is we have no power to compel an agreement with Mr. Zeidel or any other property owner. So the one concern that I have is that I'd hate to be coming back here in a year or two and saying, gosh, where are we in negotiations, and missing the chance to move on some things that the community has said is a priority. So I just want to be clear. We can't force a deal. We can be clear about the terms of a deal, but we can't compel a deal. And frankly, if there is no deal, which I think is regrettable, there'll actually be more resources to spend in other parts of the district, because the city was contemplating spending some money to build out the infrastructure. So Mr. Zeidel will make his own judgment about whether it's in his interest or not to have a deal. But we can't compel that deal. And I'm just deeply reluctant to condition a lot of things that I think are important on whether a property owner comes to terms with the city. So I just offer that as an observation. In your testimony, you also questioned the idea of buying units in market rate housing. And you say that your preferred approach is planning and developing affordable projects from the ground up. I just want to say I wholeheartedly support that. And my understanding is that the city's current position in negotiations is that we want to be able to have dirt for a project, not buying individual units.
Although in the PSU development agreement, it's buying units in market rate.
At that one site, at the University Place.
And that was what was also in the Zeidel development agreement, the one that is no longer.
So my understanding is that the city is now looking at acquiring a piece of dirt for development. I just want to affirm with respect to Zeidel and that deal that my preferred approach would be to have a piece of dirt that can be developed, not acquiring scattered site units in other buildings. And frankly, I don't even know how that would work, given that we're also trying to focus on the needs of very low-income folks, the deeply subsidized units. We've gotten away from scattered site in all of our housing, so that is individual units. So I just want to say I agree with that, and my understanding is the city is trying to negotiate dirt, not individual units with Mr. Zeidel. But and tell me again why you think Harbor NATO should be taken out, because you just think it's just not a decent enough site for development?
Well, you know, it's been mentioned for a number of years, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody say anything particularly good about it. And again, I think I'm going to defer to people. You're going to have people here who used to be city employees who can, in the housing world, who can speak
more. But you're raising a question about whether that's, given its location, the proper place.
Yeah, it's if you go by it, it doesn't really look like a great place to have people live.
It's not my preferred site either. but I don't know that we need to take it out of the document, because we're hopefully going to have more than just those two options. So thank you for your testimony.
I just think it maybe gives people false hope to put something in there that really isn't viable. That's why we're saying you should really make sure you think it's viable before it stays in the document.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now I might be able to persuade former Commissioner Corey to come up, and perhaps Margaret Bax with her, and Will White, and then after that I'm going to call Andre Baugh, who's our Planning and Sustainability Chair. I think you want to speak, Andre, so thank you for being here. But let's hear from this distinguished housing panel, and then we'll call up our volunteer superstar.
Sorry. I feel today,
Deborah on the
come
phone.
Corey.
Deborah's calling in a question, so wait a second.
Hush up. I'm Gretchen Kafori, retired, I thought, and I feel today like the ghost of Christmas past. And my job is to remind you, I'm Scrooge, by the way, and everybody that's had to work with me or for me knows that's the truth. But I would really like to remind my friends up here that three of you were involved with me in 98, 99 when we did this ambitious housing policy rewrite for the city. And Charlie, you were the planning person. And Dan, you came on to keep my chair warmed all these years, and Amanda was on the Planning Commission. So, and I think Steve was agitating about urban renewal financing in the community at the time. But so we all have
it. Was in middle school.
Yeah, well, I was going to leave you out, but I would be hard to do that. But we all put a lot of work and energy before I rode off to PSU in the sunset. And the purpose was to set clear goals for the city. The reason I feel like the Christmas past reminder is that the commitments that we made at that time have not been kept. And you've heard already that they have not been kept. They are not necessarily planning to be kept, except for a lot of scurrying in the last few weeks. And believe me, I know how hard this is, but I still don't think it's enough. Our little rump group of the old timers or the old bats or whatever we call ourselves has not.
Speak for yourself.
I know, speaking for myself. I am. The Scrooge. That we just don't think this is specific enough. There isn't enough agreement as to what will be developed and when it will be developed. And we want to see more of that specificity. It doesn't sound like it's there on the parks or on the housing. And I'm just begging you to reserve this very critical tool. Like it or not, it is a critical tool that the city has to finance affordable housing and use it wisely. These are precious resources, and you have the power to use them wisely. Thank you.
Who's next? Margaret?
Thank you. Margaret Bax, 3435 Northeast 22nd. I've passed out. Carla has my written testimonies. We all know I do better if I read from a written thing than speak expertaneously. I want to first thank you for your decision to reaffirm the city's comprehensive plan housing policy that states all new redevelopment areas will reflect the income distribution of the city, and for affirming your commitment to meet the North McAdam housing goals, which we adopted in 2003. I also want to thank you for the decision to reestablish a process for annual monitoring and reporting of progress towards meeting these goals. These are welcome modifications to the plan that was released last fall. I also want to strongly encourage you to now make a concrete plan to meet these goals. With City Council's commitment and leadership, the goals will be met. Without it, they won't. Portland has a history of getting things done. It has taken on and successfully completed difficult, expensive, complex projects such as a redevelopment of Columbia Villa and Iris Court, light rail, streetcar, and the aerial tram, named just a few. These all required long-term commitment and coordination by multiple city agencies, as well as significant public investments. Similarly, to meet the North McAdam housing goals, the city needs a multi-year development plan with specific sites, draft project concepts with anticipated number of units and timelines. Buying the units in future market rate development is not an effective strategy, nor is it a wise use of public funds. It would most likely result in higher per unit costs. You could easily spend the money, but that's not the goal. The goal is to build housing for lower-income people. The need to secure land for affordable housing was identified as fundamental to meeting the housing goals in 1999 when this URA was established, in 2003 when the housing strategy was adopted, and several times since. It is still literally the foundation of a successful housing strategy, yet it has not been done. Most of the infrastructure has been built. Thousands of market-rate condos and apartments, office, retail, parking, garages, hotels. But today, there is still only one building with 209 units of affordable housing. On page 29 of the report accompanying the amendment today, and I made a copy of it for you, is a list of 14 PDC-owned properties. According to this chart, most have been either sold or disposed of for the parking facilities, hotels, condos, park streets. But there are four remaining active sites, including the double block across the street from the park. This is often referred to as Block 33. In the early days of the district, this lot was slated to be the centerpiece of the city's affordable housing strategy. In fact, by 2006, the city had invested over $6 million to secure this site for 400 units of affordable housing. No housing has been built there, and the city has now released the owner of the site, OHSU, of its obligation to make it affordable for housing. Yet it appears that at least $3 million of PDC housing funds are still tied up at the site. I suggest the city considers entering an agreement with OHSU to build affordable housing there if you do indeed still have a stake in the property. OHSU has had the use of city funds for over 10 years, and during this period, property values have risen dramatically. Alternatively, OHSU could transfer another suitable site from their extensive holdings in the district for affordable housing for its low-income clients and workers. Similarly, PSU should be required to make the site available for low-income housing. They, too, employ workers, many who travel a long way to their jobs because they can't afford to live nearby. Zidell also should be required to make housing site available. City intends to spend nearly $25 million to build streets and other public improvements to make Zidell and OHSU's land developable and more valuable. Allowing the city to buy land for affordable housing is a minimal requirement in exchange for past and future large public expenditures. Alternatively, Zidell and OHSU could pay to complete Bond Street and the other public infrastructures as developers must do in non-URA projects. The city could then use this money for affordable housing and parks. 60 years ago, Portland established its first urban renewal district, the South Auditorium URA. Historic Italian and Jewish communities were demolished. displacing thousands of residents, along with churches, community centers, and small businesses. In their place, high-rise apartments, strip malls, concrete parks, and fountains were built. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but I think many of us today would agree that this wasn't the right thing to do. Much of that area is being added to the North Mac URA in this plat amendment. As a community, we have an opportunity to get it right this time, to build a vibrant, diverse neighborhood, and to not repeat past mistakes. With your leadership and direction, we can do this. Without it, it just won't happen. Thanks again for taking the time and effort to make this emerging neighborhood one that is affordable and accessible to people of all income levels, and one the city will be proud of for generations to come. Thank you. I've attached the original housing goals from the URA that was adopted in 1999 and the list of properties, which, interestingly enough, on the back side are your demographics of the neighborhood, which are pretty interesting as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret. At the end of the, I'll let you keep going with your testimony and the others we've invited, but I want to make sure we get Patrick back up and also Tracy from the Housing Bureau to address some of the specifics that have been raised. But one of them, of course, is this Block 33. And as I understand it, the Housing Bureau recommended abandoning that housing commitment there. And that was a decision that was supported by PHB. So I want to hear more about the rationale behind that later
on. Yeah, I would too. That's interesting. Certainly it happened well after we were gone. And
me too.
I think that, yeah. So thank you.
The point is then, where's that $3 million?
Let's hear from Patrick about that. So yeah. Go ahead, Will.
Good afternoon. I'm Will White, former city housing director and until recently senior advisor to Senator Jeff Merkley. And I really appreciate the opportunity to testify today on a matter that I've been working on for now about 20 years. So I want to start with a little bit of history because I think it helps inform what is going on now. I was already active on housing issues in Portland in 1996 when the River District URA was first created. At that time, along with other advocates, I advised the council that a deal whereby the city investments, which were taking down the Lovejoy ramp, building the streetcar, building two parks, and a water feature, should not be responded to by simply getting development at higher densities per acre. And that was the plan at the time, and it was clear to me that that's exactly what developers want always, is to develop at the highest possible density because that's the maximum profit that will be realized. We presented data demonstrating this and said that the city should instead require a mix of incomes in the new neighborhood so that we really ended up with a balanced and diverse neighborhood. Ultimately, as you know, the River District did become a successful mixed income neighborhood because of the development of projects like Pearl Court, Lovejoy Station, the Sitka Station Place, and others. And I think when I am with people from out of town visiting there, they're astonished that they can't pick out the affordable housing in that neighborhood. It looks every bit as nice as the market rate rental apartments and condos. So that happened because we built those affordable properties early while the land prices were low, and the city held the developer to explicit standards. And so I think we need to learn from that. 2 years after the River District was established, a then member of City Council called me and apologized for having not listened to some of the advice we offered back in 1996. And he said, "I'd like you to sit on the advisory committee for a new district we're about to establish called North McAdam. It's going to be 130 acres, much larger. We really need to get the housing piece right this time." And so along with Tasha Harmon, I accepted that appointment and spent the next several years in those meetings trying to get the housing piece right. But guess what? That did not happen. PDC and the council adopted sound targets, but some strategic mistakes were made in three areas. First of all, It was decided that the housing should happen at the back end of the development period rather than at the front, when everything was going to be more expensive, and that was with the understandable rationale that TIF-producing projects had to be done first. But secondly, sites were not acquired while the land was cheap. I don't know how many meetings I went to where staff reported to us that they'd turned down a possible acquisition because the owner wanted too much money for it, and then the prices would continue to escalate, of course. And finally, affordable housing was not required in the specific development agreements with property owners early on in the process. So as a result, we have nearly 3,000 very handsome condominium units and luxury apartments that have been built, but not a single unit of affordable housing until more than a decade had passed, and only that sole project, I believe, was approved because it would provide housing for homeless veterans during a time of war. So it was a very compelling and important project. I'm glad it got approved, but it took that kind of heart connection to get a first and only project approved in North McAdam. We then made another serious mistake in my mind.
Well, it took one other thing.
Yes.
It took the reversal of the collapse of the tax credit market.
Yes.
It, in fairness, it just didn't pencil out during the Depression, but when the tax credit market came back, Margaret Van Vliet, I think, took 10 different runs of that one. But once the tax credit market solidified and the financing, we were able to move forward. But that's...
Yeah, we had a period where the tax credits were getting a very low return. I agree with that. The other mistake in my mind was in 2003 when we abandoned the comprehensive plan policy that Gretchen Kifori just referred to, which states that new neighborhoods created with public money should reflect the income profile of the city as a whole. Instead of being bold and finding creative ways to get the funds to do this, we adopted the now well-known constrained funding model, which lowered the housing goals by 64%. Not just a small cut in the housing goals, a 64% slashing of the goals that would have made this neighborhood comparable to the rest of the city of Portland. Now, then what happened after that? We didn't even meet those modest goals. We have built 479 units of affordable. We were to have built 479 units under the constrained goals, but we're short of that now by 270 units, which is a 56% shortfall on the slashed goals. And now we have a chance to get some additional money, but I just want to point out that as Patrick explained with the reconfigured urban renewal districts, the net gain for affordable housing across all districts is only $3.5 million. $3.5 million, which is 10% of what's been spent to date in North McAdam to get one single project accomplished. So it's a very small amount of money. It's $48 million in North McAdam, but that's because we're taking money out of the education district and other districts. So I regard this as our third and final chance to get it right in North McAdam. We finally have to hold on to keeping our commitments as a city, and to me that means doing the following four things. Number one, we should develop all of the missing 270 units required under the constrained funding goals on Parcel 3. The city already owns it. It's been assessed as a site that could handle 400 units of housing. We've already built nearly 3,000 market rate units in North McAdam. To my mind, we don't need to do more on Parcel 3. We should get those 270 units there and have at least 100 of those affordable to people below 30% of median income. Those are the people that have the hardest time finding a place to live anywhere in the city. And nonprofit developers have created many successful models for this type of housing. We can do it, and we can do it much cheaper than the one project that was built so far in the district. And another time we could go into the many reasons why it can be done less expensively. Secondly, we need to stick to the goal that was established in 2003 and under the comprehensive plan, that if after the first 3,000 units were built, we would revert to the commitment of having the urban renewal district's population match the income profile of the city as a whole. Thirdly, in order to accomplish this, we have to secure sites now. Now, I've talked with people actively involved in doing the hard work to do this, and there isn't enough money right now to go out and buy all those sites, but the negotiation could happen now, and purchase agreements could be made to be then actually paid off down the line as the money becomes available. We don't have to lay out all the cash right now in order to tie up those sites. Fourthly, and last, we need to require a strong housing component in the Zidell Development Agreement and require that both PSU and OHSU step up to provide land or resources for housing that would be appropriate to the many Portlanders who work or study at these institutions, institutions that have received great benefits from the North McAdam URA over the past decade and a half. So one example of that is the money that's been paid for Block 33 for the air rights. We were supposed to get 400 units of affordable housing out of that. I think we need to go back and say, how do we somehow make up for that? It's not necessarily that same plan of parking underneath and housing above, but we need to do something to make up for what we lost when that agreement was allowed to go away. So I appreciate the fact that you, Mayor Hales, and other commissioners have agreed to slow this process so that we can look at it and get it right, getting in particular the housing component correct. And I salute you for doing that. Those of us that are here today that have already testified or are about to do so will hold the city accountable, but are also very willing to work with you and your staff to do this. And we want to find smart strategies for creating a true mixed income neighborhood in North McAdam, not a city-funded district where only the wealthy can afford to live. And I'll say in closing that I know from my 5 years in Washington that Portland has a national reputation for bold and progressive accomplishments, a neighborhood developed with immense city resources that doesn't accommodate the hardworking people that keep this city going falls far short of that reputation. So let's regroup, refocus, and find a way to do that now. I urge you not to approve the current amendment until a detailed strategy has been developed for accomplishing that goal. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Let me ask a question maybe of all three of you, and that is, it's good that we've kind of looked back at the history of what worked and what didn't work. Some of us have been involved in that history, some who haven't. I appreciate your willingness to roll up your sleeves and work with Jillian Detweiler on my staff and others on this package. But frankly, some people listening to this discussion might be a little confused by the apparent dissonance between Mr. Quinton's presentation and yours. And that is, to put it kind of bluntly, do you approve? We can only spend the money we have now. We can't spend the money from the past. We have awesome power on this panel, but it's not over yesterday. It's over today and days subsequent to today. So we get to spend the money we have now. The proposal that Mr. Quinton's laid on the table with your help is that we, of the available resources, put $23 million into development projects, $15 million into infrastructure, and $47 million into housing. Do you think that's the right balance?
Well, I think that number is a little misleading, but to give due credit to Patrick, he presented both figures, and I'm glad to be corrected if wrong, but that $47 million isn't the net figure. That's the increase just for North McAdam by taking something like, I think, $25 million that would have been spent in the education district and moving that over,
right,
and similar in the other districts. So the net increase is just $3.5 million, and as I said, that's only 10%. Of what's already been spent in the North McAdam district on housing, and we can see how little was achieved with that.
Right, but we can only spend money we have, and as we've seen with both, say, Gateway and the education URA, just because you draw an urban renewal district doesn't mean that development actually happens, right? And recessions come along as they did in North McAdam and Central Eastside. So again, we have what we do is adopt a general plan here Mm-hmm. And then we do development agreements. As you recall, we adopted the general plan for the River District in 96.
Yeah.
We inked the development agreement in 99. So we do the plan first and development agreements second, typically. But so, again, we're being presented with a plan that spends $47 million of the new district's available resources on housing, $23 million on development, and $15 million on infrastructure. I assume you like that split.
I very much appreciate the work that Patrick and his team have done to